Up next, we have our book reading program, Ohomuni Iyotaka, read by Gail Hubling.
Hundred in the Hand, a novel by Joseph M. Marshall III, Chapter 5, Tent Town. 3 days later, Cloud and Grable sat with Crazy Horse on a ridge northwest of the intruder's sprawling tent town. On the Buffalo Creek meadow below, the white tents were arranged in straight rows. The sight was an eyesore as far as the observers were concerned. Just as annoying was the ant-like activity among and around them. A few paces from them, Goings, taken alive, Little Bird, and Little Hawk, Crazy Horse's younger brother, sat in the grass. A warm breeze prowled the hills and gullies and ruffled the manes and tails of 9 horses standing patiently in the gully just below the ridge. With them were the 2 horse holders, Yellow Wolf and Rabbit. Like Cloud, Crazy Horse was in favor of immediate and hard-hitting action against the Long Knives. They were both surprised to hear some of the older leaders advise the warriors to wait for Red Cloud to arrive from one of the lower encampments on the Tongue River. Blackshield had a different opinion. "Doing nothing is the same as giving the Long Knives permission to stay on Buffalo Creek," he had said to Cloud. Cloud liked Crazy Horse. There was an innate shyness about the younger man that precluded any pretense, even though he had a formidable reputation as a fighting man and was envied by many older warriors. Last year, he had been chosen as a shirt wearer to the surprise of many people, though not because he lacked the character necessary to be one. Over the years, that position had become more of a political selection, as young men from influential families were most often picked. It was a way for the old men to curry favor. They seemed to have forgotten that shirt wearers of old were humble men who truly cared about the welfare of the people and placed it above their own needs. Like everyone else, Crazy Horse was burned brown by the sun, but his brown hair seemed lighter in the summer. When he was a small boy, his mother had named him Light Hair, and Cloud remembered that some boys teased him because of his lighter-than-usual skin. No one was teasing him now. As a battlefield leader, he had a strong and loyal following, and many felt that as a shirt wearer, he was a throwback to what they were in the old days. Crazy Horse put away his glass and nodded slowly. "You are right. I think they are planning on staying there." Grable's eyes flashed as he jabbed the air angrily. "They have been there 3 days, and we have done nothing." Cloud pointed to the large herd of mules and horses grazing in the meadow south of the creek. "For the past 2 days, they gathered them up around sundown and put them inside a rope fence for the night." Crazy Horse plucked the blade of grass and chewed on it briefly, staring thoughtfully at the distant herd. "Maybe the Long Knives are not as watchful because nothing has happened." He glanced toward the young men waiting nearby. "But we will need more men, if I understand your thinking." Cloud agreed. "Yes, maybe 20. Grable pointed to 2 dark specks on the high point south of the meadow. "We were there 3 days ago. I had a feeling they would put sentries there because they can see the whole valley to the north and east with their long glass. Below us there is a hill, and 2 sentries are there too. They can see anyone moving in, but I think there is a way to fool them. We have some Long Knife horses, a few bays and sorrels like theirs," he said. "Perhaps we can use a few, 4 or so, to get in close to their herd. Some of you can dress in white man's clothes and slowly move in around sundown, walking with the Long Knife horses." Crazy Horse smiled. "Yes, good thinking, Uncle. Then we drive away as many of theirs as we can. Some of the men can help drive the herd, and some with guns can slow down any pursuers." Cloud motioned towards their horses in the gully. "Yellow Wolf can ride anything, I was thinking," he said. "That you, him, and your brother and me can sneak into the herd, starting just before sundown, when the shadows are long." "A good plan," said Crazy Horse. "I think it will work." Grable chuckled. "It will work, I know it. I will be one of those hiding and waiting and hoping that some of the Long Knives chase you." Cloud glanced up at the sun hovering just above the western ridges. "Tonight we can explain our plan. If we start early in the morning, we can be in place by early afternoon. The less we move, the less chance of anyone spotting us, or especially our horses." Crazy Horse nodded. "Yes." He motioned toward his younger brother. We can meet you at the creek next to your camp at sunup. I will bring 6 men besides the 2 of us. On the way home northward to the villages along the Tongue, all 9 riders stayed inside the tree line until they came to Goose Creek. As he stopped to water the horses, Cloud approached Rabbit. As usual, the boy was apart from everyone else. Do you want to be a part of the raid tomorrow? Cloud asked. The boy's eyes widened. He nodded slowly. Good. We will take as many as we can, and we will need to drive them fast east and then north through the valleys. I have a fast little mare you can ride. Thank you. She is broke to the gun as well. I trained her myself. But there is one thing I want you to do. Have High Eagle look at your arm tonight. Yes, I will. Good. I will bring the horse to your lodge this evening. You can tie her there overnight. High Backbone, a Minikanju Lakota, known better as Hump, was the same kind of man as his friend Graybull. They were veteran fighting men with nothing but disdain for white people, especially soldiers. At the moment, he was holding his anger in check only because he was a guest at the lodge of Black Shield. Hump respected the older man, and he was not angry with him, only at the news he had just heard. We have often faced the Long Knives when there was more of them, and they are always better armed, he said, knowing he was not stating anything new to Black Shield. And when did talking to them ever do us any good? It sounds to me like someone wants the glory for getting rid of them single-handedly. Black Shield smiled. It was a smile that told the younger man that he had correctly assessed the situation. We cannot wait, said Hump. Cloud followed the Long Knives from the outpost on the lower Powder. He and his young men were ready to do something 2 days ago. Crazy Horse feels the same. They went to watch the Long Knives today. Who will stop them if they decide to do anything? You know as well as I do, no one is foolish enough to get in their way. A few might grumble among themselves. Hump stood. There was an air of strength and competence about him. He was a physically powerful man, still in the prime of life. I will help them. I have a feeling there will be something tomorrow. That will be good, said Black Shield. Those Long Knives should not think we are afraid of them. Sweetwater Woman put a slice of roasted elk, a cup of tea, and a toy bow at her husband's elbow as he finished counting the bullets for his rifle. Then she waited demurely on her chair. Light poured in through the open door, even though the sun had just gone down. The enticing aroma of the meat got his attention, and he glanced down at the wooden dish. A slight frown wrinkled his brow when he noticed the tiny bowl. He lifted a glance toward his wife. A flush on her cheeks made his stomach flutter. There must be a very small being around here to use that little bowl, he stammered. There will be, she whispered, and nervously cleared her throat. He felt his own face grow warm, and he quickly put aside the bag of bullets. Ah, he said, staring at the toy bowl. Does this mean that a hand went to her chest as she nodded, her eyes misting a little. Cloud scrambled from his seat and was at her side, a smile spreading across his face. When? Grandmother Willow thinks during the middle of winter moon, she replied softly. No words came to mind, so all he could do was take her tiny pale hands in his. Grandmother is so happy, Sweetwater told him. She was there when you were born and cannot wait to help your son come into the world. He could only nod. After a moment, he finally spoke. I will try to be a good father, he cringed inwardly. It was weak and did not measure up to the happiness obvious to on her face. You are like your father, Grandmother told me. She said he was a very good father. I know this for sure, he said. Our child would be... is blessed to have you as his mother. He could think of no further words to match the emotions rising in him, and all he could think to do was to hold his wife. Her soft breath against his neck was so strangely reassuring. After several long moments, he reluctantly moved away. Cloud went out to find his grandmother. She was by the fire stirring a pot of simmering choke cherries. She had lost her only son and a daughter-in-law to sickness of the balls, the cholera. Yet there was a quiet strength in her frail being that he envied. Grandmother, he said gently, taking a seat nearby as Sweetwater emerged from the lodge, I am happy to know you will be there to bring our child into the world. My life has been good, she said. I watched my son grow into a good man, and then you as well. Now I will hold your son in my arms. To be grandmother to the child of my grandson is a sacred thing. But you have a more important task. It is your responsibility to leave him a good trail to follow. There was a different sense he could not label or describe about Sweetwater's presence as he lay next to her that night. His grandmother's words echoed in his head as he drifted off to sleep. They were still on his mind in the cool air of the new dawn as he tied the weapons on the neck rope of the sturdy chestnut gilding. Sweetwater woman came with a bag of food and flasks of water. Her face seemed to glow even in the gray light, causing a pang of anxiety and cloud. For the first time in his years as a warrior, he felt a tinge of uncertainty. He was not uncertain about his abilities as a fighting man, however, but about something larger, his mortality. His mother and grandmother had both reminded him now and then of the necessity of the warrior in the Lakota way of life. Better to lay a warrior naked in death, they had said to him, than to be wrapped up well with the heart of water inside. The same words had been spoken by generations of mothers and grandmothers to sons and grandsons, so that the nation would remain strong. And the nation was strong, but often it was a strength born of the grief of widows and fatherless children. Cloud finished his task and took the food and water from his wife. We will be home after dark, he said, with a large herd of horses and mules if we are lucky. As soon as he had spoken the words, the objective for the day did not seem as important as it had the day before. Before he could say anything more, Rabbit, Yellow Wolf, and the others arrived leading their horses. Grey Wolf had managed to gather articles of white man's clothing, which he had stuffed in a bag. Cloud drew his wife close and held her. If anything happened to him, he would remember the softness of her cheek against his face. Why had that thought passed through my mind, he wondered. He was thinking about Sweetwater Woman as he waited in a thicket east of Buffalo Creek in the Long Knife tent town. The sun was just above the western ridges. Some distance south of him, he could catch glimpses of Yellow Wolf, but only because he knew where to look for him. Crazy Horse and Little Hawk might as well have been trees for all he could see of them. It was all good. The moment the sun slipped behind the ridges, the four of them would slip toward the herd of mules and horses in the wide meadow to the west. Cloud scrutinized the tall sorrel gelding he had brought with him. He was from Grey Bull's herd, an older and quiet horse. Grey Bull had put the headstall with the iron bit on him because the horse responded better to it. As far as Cloud was concerned, the iron bits were hard on a horse's mouth. He knew nothing of how whites trained their horses, but there were gentler ways to control a horse than iron bits. They were harsh and unnecessary. He looked down at the faded red shirt and dark gray wool trousers he had put on. At least they were comfortable. He felt sorry for the horse. As his gaze lingered on the trousers, he thought of his wife. She was only 2 years old or so, most thought, when she had been found wandering alone in a desolate area north of the Sweetwater River. The Sweetwater was south of Elk Mountain and along the road the wagons used, the Oregon Trail. Two Lakota scouts watching the wagons noticed something moving along an old game trail. They had thought it was a fawn, especially after they heard what they thought was the bleating that fawns make. When they closed in, they were utterly astonished to find a little white child so very far from the line of wagons that had already passed. The child was happy to see them, but they were not about to take her back to the wagon people, so they did the only thing they could. They brought her home with them. After the scouts told their story, the people began calling her Fawn. When she had her woman's ceremony years later, she was given the name Sweetwater Woman. As far as her adoptive parents were concerned, she had been born to them near Sweetwater River. Cloud allowed thoughts of his wife to linger and wondered what their child would look like. A sense of caution suddenly crept in unexpectedly, and with an effort he returned his attention to the task at hand. He had always been cautious any time there was danger, but it was without thought. It was part of his nature as a fighting man. Now the thought was there like a pebble in his moccasin, seemingly of its own accord. After a deep breath, he looked south and picked out Yellow Wolf hidden in a plum thicket. To the west, half of the sun was behind a ridge. It was time to move toward the herd of Long Knife horses and mules. He stood and patted the horse's neck. Two gullies to the south, Crazy Horse watched the sun slipping behind the ridge. The land east of the foothills suddenly fell into deep shadow. It was time to move. He wore a gray wool shirt that chafed his skin and blue trousers that once belonged to a soldier. A big bay was his choice of a mount, one that he had found running loose after the revenge raid on Julesburg almost 2 years past. That had been after the Long Knives had attacked the Blue Clouds in Cheyenne at Sand Creek. The clothes felt strange, but the horse was a good one. He tucked his long braids behind the collar of his shirt and led the horse up the slight incline out of the gully. The horse's ears perked forward as he caught the scent of the herd in the distance. Farther to the south, Yellow Wolf and Little Hawk watched the sun go down and emerge from hiding. Little Hawk had been in among the rocks, and Yellow Wolf was in a plum thick to the north of him. Both were dressed in white man's clothing. Following Gray Bull's advice, Yellow Wolf had a blue roan mare, and Little Hawk had a sorrel with no white markings. None of the four, Cloud, Crazy Horse, Yellow Wolf, or Little Hawk, carried a firearm. Their task was to infiltrate the Long Knife herd and drive the horses and mules east, away from the tent town. Staying hidden were Gray Bull, Taken Alive, Goings, and 12 more men, including Rabbit, and they were all armed. Some of them would help drive the herd, and the rest would be the rear guard to discourage any pursuit. Rabbit was nervous, but not because of the impending raid. He was looking at three white men who were apparently not part of the Long Knife town. Rabbit had taken a position in an area suggested by Gray Bull. After looking around most of the morning, he had found a crevice between two boulders just high enough to hide him and his horse. Through the afternoon, he had improved his shelter by filling the ends of the openings between the boulders with cut branches. As a result, the boulders looked from a distance like they were choked with shrubs. Near sunset, the three men had stopped in the gully below Rabbit's hiding place and proceeded to make camp. Rabbit could only guess that they had been coming up the Bozeman Road. He had to keep the mare quiet. There was no doubt he could escape if the white men were to spot him, but that would probably spoil the raid. The only thing he could do was wait and watch the sun go down, as the whites built a small fire and picketed the horses. Then a plan began to form in his mind. It would only remain to be seen if he had the nerve to carry it through. West of Rabbit's hiding place and unaware of his predicament, Cloud, Crazy Horse, Yellow Wolf, and Little Hawk, separated widely by trees, hills, and gullies, walked their horses slowly toward the Long Knife herd. Somewhere in the same trees, hills, and gullies, about a dozen Lakota fighting men waited anxiously as the shadows lengthened, but none were more anxious than Rabbit. And that concludes Chapter 5. 100 in the Hand, a novel by Joseph M. Marshall III, Chapter 6. 200 Mules. Although he knew he had to keep an eye on the white men, Rabbit had to resist the urge to duck out of sight. One of them might become curious and look among the boulders that sat only a few paces above their camp. Rabbit knew that Cloud, Crazy Horse, Little Hawk, and Yellow Wolf were slowly working their way toward the Long Knife herd. There was nothing to do but wait for the sound of galloping hooves. That could be soon or sometime in the middle of the night, knowing how patient and relentless Cloud and Crazy Horse both were. To make it worse, the mare was restless, and Rabbit guessed it was due to the cramped space between the boulders. Shadows on the eastern slopes deepened quickly after the sun dropped behind the ridges. Cloud led his horse across an open area but kept a stand of trees between the herd and himself and his horse. Better to move in as close as possible without being seen, they had all decided. Among the trees ahead, he saw soldiers leading and driving animals north toward the line of wagons. If anyone did happen to spot him, he would simply keep moving forward as though he were looking for something. It would be a gamble, but one that he and the others would have to take because they had no firearms, only knives and war clubs. So far, he estimated he was about 100 paces from the herd. He knew the others had not been spotted because the Long Knives had not raised an alarm. Crazy Horse was directly east of the end of the line of wagons, also about 100 paces from the herd. Although he knew Cloud was south of him, he had no way of knowing how far or how close. The plan was that he and Crazy Horse would sneak into the herd with their horses. Then the man who was in the position first would give a signal, the muted cry of a screech owl. Next, they would cause enough of a commotion to frighten the mules and horses into breaking out of the rope corral before the soldiers could respond. Once the animals were moving, Yellow Wolf and Little Hawk would enter the herd on their horses and help lead them east, or try to. But first, the guards had to be bypassed somehow or eliminated. Earlier, he and Crazy Horse had decided it would be better to eliminate any guards who might be in the way. The only question was how. Keeping within the tent of their plan, he and Cloud could decide to make a move if the opportunity arose. When or how that would happen would be a judgment call for either of them. He stood on the left side of the horse and watched the soldiers moving the mules and wagon horses into the temporary rope corral. Grabbing the reins, he walked several paces. Ahead, he saw two aspens side by side, a good place to wait unobtrusively. He led the horse toward them. Little Hawk led his horse across a dry creek and stopped behind a tall shrub. He wore a blue calico shirt, much too large for his slender torso. He had asked his mother to plait his long hair into one braid. Not having a rifle or six-shooter was not to his liking, but he accepted that condition. But he did bring the biggest knife he owned and a stone-headed war club. Like his older brother, he worried about the impending challenge, but rose to meet it once things were set in motion. And like his brother, he was slender and his skin was lighter than usual. In battle, he was every bit as daring. Unlike his brother, he was outgoing and gregarious and laughed easily. But his eyes could turn dark with intensity in a heartbeat. At the moment, he was intense and focused. He decided to wait behind the shrub until something happened. As he settled in, he picked out routes he might follow once Cloud and Crazy Horse began driving the herd. Waiting was not easy, but it bothered him more that several hundred long knives in the area had rifles and he did not. Yellow Wolf had stopped moving as well. He knew he could move closer, but decided against it. There was nothing to do now but wait. Stroking his horse's neck, he peered between the trees. The Long Knives had so many horses. 300 paces farther east, Grey Bull had placed six of the young men along a route he could only guess Cloud and Crazy Horse would take. Hump did the same with the other seven, but when they saw the horses moving, all of them could move quickly to block any pursuers behind them. Grey Bull was worried about Rabbit, but decided that the boy would probably do well. Besides, there was nothing to be done now. Rabbit listened intently to the men around the campfire he could not see, though its glow was growing brighter. After a while, he could discern the three voices and was relieved that they seemed inclined to stay near the fire. The aroma of coffee wafted through the evening air. The whites were talking about a town further north called Virginia City, a place associated with gold. Rabbit shifted his attention toward the west, but it was impossible to see anything, and there were no sounds that indicated anything was happening. In the deepening dusk, coyotes were barking all around, sounding much closer than they were. Overhead, he heard the strange grunt of a night hawk diving after insects. Although there were occasional pauses in the whites' conversation, they talked almost continuously. They kept their voices low, however. Rabbit wondered if they knew they were near the Long Knives' camp. A clink of metal in the fire hissed, followed by an angry curse. Rabbit stroked the horse's nose, reassuring as footsteps came toward the end of the boulder. Then he heard the man relieving himself on the dry ground. In a moment, footsteps returned to the camp. Anxiety and nervousness more or less made him forget the throbbing in his injured arm. High Eagle had soaked and removed the rawhide covering. The skin had started to heal over the stump, but still itched fiercely after the covering was gone. He had to keep it clean, the medicine man told him, to keep it from festering. His mother had shortened the sleeves of a light doeskin shirt and had cut long fringes into the ends. As a result, at first glance, the stump was not so obvious. His biggest obstacle was learning to use his left hand. Even loading the gun was still a chore, but he was determined to overcome the clumsiness. Rabbit reached down slowly and touched the handle of the six-shooter tucked into a narrow sash around his waist. It was entirely possible that something would stop the raid or that something would go wrong. No matter what might happen, he was faced with two choices. He could stay hidden and do nothing, or he could follow through with the plan he had in mind. The six-shooter suddenly seemed to push against his abdomen. It felt cold. Dusk slid into evening, then night brought on shadowy hues. Dozens and dozens of fires glittered inside the line of wagons placed end to end as a protective wall. Cloud had moved to a clump of young aspen trees. Ahead of him were the rope fence and a soldier standing guard. A soldier armed with a rifle attached to a strap hanging from one shoulder. Cloud wondered how quickly that soldier could bring his rifle up to fire it. One shot in the quiet night air would spoil everything. Where there was one sentry, others were sure to be posted. The question was where, but he guessed that they would be spread out along the rope fence. The soldier suddenly turned and yelled at a horse that approached. Cloud realized that the soldiers were there as much to keep the animals inside the flimsy rope fence as to guard against intruders. He watched the soldier, who was about 40 paces away. The sentry was looking into the herd and seemingly not concerned with possible intruders. Cloud studied the area between him and the soldier. Tall grass and sagebrush and fairly level. He spotted a thick and tall cluster of sagebrush halfway to the rope fence and knew what he would do. For a moment, he stroked the horse's neck and then slowly led him toward the sagebrush cluster, staying on the left side of the horse. Reaching the cluster, he wrapped one long rein around a thick stalk as if the horse had become entangled. Then he picked out a low spot in a patch of thick grass a few paces behind the horse. He knelt, mimicked the horse's throaty neigh, and ducked down. The soldier turned, said something, and stared at the horse. In a moment he approached and did not seem inclined to be cautious, clawed up further down, and silently moved behind a thin bush. "Hey, fella," the man said. "How did you get through the rope? You get yourself tangled, I see." The soldier's rifle was still hooked to a strap that hung from one shoulder. He stooped and then knelt to untangle the rein. Cloud slid his heavy stone-headed war club from his belt and silently wove his way through the sagebrush and grass. He paused behind the soldier only for an instant to gauge the distance and then swung. There was a hollow thunk as the club head connected with the man's skull just above the right ear, and the soldier slumped forward and fell. Cloud stepped to the startled horse to calm him. Beside them, the soldier's legs twitched and then he was still. Kneeling, Cloud removed the rifle and bullet pouch. A quick search turned up nothing else of use. He considered taking the Colt, but the man was small and it would not fit. He slid the white-black strap over his shoulder in the manner the soldier had worn it. Taking the horse's rein, he walked to the spot where the dead man had been standing and took up a position. Anyone still able to discern him in the rapidly fading light would see a sentry at his post with a loose horse. He was familiar with the rifle and how it worked, so if another soldier approached too closely, he would deal with it. The next obstacle was the rope fence. It was attached to tripods of thin poles every 20 or 30 paces. The one next to him was surprisingly sturdy when he pulled on it. He decided to cut the ropes and leave a length to tie it off tightly. Farther up the fence, it would still remain tight, he hoped. He finished the task and stood for a moment to listen. Everything seemed normal, or at least quiet. Voices drifted through the deepening night. He left the horse tied to a thick bush and walked down the fence line, cutting the ropes at the next two tripods, and waited. Off in the shadowy distance, he could make out the form of a man and had to assume it was another soldier. Turning, he silently made his way back to his horse. Wherever Crazy Horse was, it was time for Cloud to move into the herd. The man Cloud thought might be a soldier watched his shadowy form fade into the distant darkness. Crazy Horse carefully dropped the hammer of the rifle he had taken off the soldier at his feet. The shadow had moved in a way that hinted he was probably not a soldier, but he could not be sure. So he had the rifle ready just in case. He knelt and grabbed the bullet pouch and pressed the finger to the side of the man's neck. The man was dead. Crazy Horse wiped the soldier's blood off his knife blade in the dirt and silently moved up to the rope fence. He was a long stone's throw east of Cloud, though neither of them knew that. Touching the ropes, he felt slack in the line and decided to slice them. Once the lead horses pushed against it, he thought, the fence would easily collapse. Now it was time to move into the herd. He walked back to the aspen trees and retrieved his horse. At about the same time, Cloud was leading his horse slowly into the herd. He could see the long ears of the mules perking up inquisitively, but the presence of his horse dispelled any nervousness. Once inside the outer edge of the herd, he worked his way towards the western end. The pungent smell of horse urine was in the air. When he reached the western edge, he would stop and wait and mingle with the herd, giving Crazy Horse time to do the same. Even if he could not see him, Cloud decided that he would somehow startle the animals and push them east past the wagons. Even if he were not in position, there was no doubt Crazy Horse would do his part. Beyond the wagons, nearly 100 paces north, he saw the flickering glow of fires and heard voices drift into the air, engaged in conversations he could not comprehend. Somewhere, perhaps a stone's throw away, someone coughed. A sentry, he was certain. He let the horse graze but stayed next to him. Coyotes were barking and howling in the darkness all around, a chorus he knew well. Farther north of the wagons and the tent town was Buffalo Creek, angling southeast before it bent northeast. They would have to cross it with their captured herd and stay to the north of it. Cloud doubted the soldiers could mount an effective pursuit. Even if they did, Gray Bull and Hump and their young men would be waiting. The rifle was heavy, the strap it was attached to pulling down on his right shoulder. He would have to hold the weapon in order to swing upon the horse in order to control it. He wondered how the soldiers managed the weight and unwieldiness. Moments passed. His instincts told him it was time. Cloud cupped a hand over his mouth and softly cleared his throat and attempted the warble of a screech owl. He nearly laughed at how pitiful it sounded. Clearing his throat again as quietly as he could, he tried again. The second attempt was better. Taking a deep breath, he let out a wavering call, satisfied that it was almost like the trembling voice of the tiny owl, and waited. In a moment, he heard an answer somewhere in the darkness to the east. It had to be Crazy Horse or a screech owl anxious for a mate. He decided it was Crazy Horse because it was a short call, not the usual long, almost endling warble a real owl would make. Collecting the reins, he patted the horse's neck and swung up onto its back. The sudden motion caught the attention of a few mules and horses nearby. Cloud secured his seat, took the rifle with his left hand, and leaned the butt of the weapon on his thigh, gathering the reins with his right and kicked the horse. Hissing softly, he was glad to see the animals closest to him respond and move away. He urged his mount into a slow lope toward the wagons, and when he heard the herd moving away, he spun and headed south. Switching the reins to his left hand, he yanked the war club from his belt and slapped the horse lagging just ahead of him. The resounding whack might as well have been a cannon shot. All the mules in front of him bolted. Nearby, he heard a shout and recognized Crazy Horse's voice. So far, so good. Crazy Horse was mounted as soon as he heard and answered the screech owl call. He let out a low growl, imitating a bear to startle the mules. The sound of milling mules turned into a steady, low staccato of running hooves. He heard Cloud's shout somewhere behind him and added his war cry to the growing din. In the span of several heartbeats, panic gripped the herd. Those on the west end pushed their companions ahead. Somewhere at the western edge, Cloud and Crazy Horse maneuvered their horses to stay with the flowing mass. The first frightened and inquisitive shouts from sentries were drowned in the growing rumble of hooves that had now reached a gallop. The chase was on. The rope fence stretched and snapped, no match for the powerful surge of bodies, sending a few of the tripod supports spinning up into the air as it propelled by a giant's sling. A steady rumble grew immediately into a low thunder as the herd galloped east. Yellow Wolf heard the thunder and felt it on the soles of his feet and swiftly mounted his runner, the fastest horse he had ever owned. His intention was to move in near the point of the herd and lead them, or at least influence the frightened animals as much as he could into following. Little Hawk would do the same wherever he was. At the moment, Yellow Wolf's first task was to match the speed of the herd while avoiding obstacles in the dark, such as low branches and sudden holes. Fortunately, waiting in the darkness had acclimated Little Hawk's vision, and he also paced the herd before he tried to find where the leaders were. The undulating, shadowy flow of the herd was like a black flood and just as dangerous. If he fell or his horse faltered, they would both be trampled. Grey Bull also heard the thunder from the ground. His horse whinnied inquisitively. He pushed both pistols securely into his belt and swung onto the anxious bay. The approaching thunder was to his north. "Get ready!" he shouted into the night, knowing the young men would hear. Hump was already mounted and behind a thicket. The growing thunder was to the south of his position. There was nothing to do but wait. He hoped the young men would wait as they were told and attack only if there was any kind of pursuit from the soldiers. Rabbit knew something was happening. The mare tensed and perked her ears and looked off toward the west. Then he heard the noise, and so did the white men in the little hollow below the boulders. His heart started pounding slightly. "What is that?" he heard one of them say. "Something off to the west," came the reply. "You suppose it be buffalo? Maybe a stampede? Sounds like that. Whatever it be, gents, I think we best get out of here." Rabbit heard boots scuffling and something being dragged over the ground. As though in a daydream, he put his thoughts into motion, driven by the sudden anger that rose like a bad taste and brushed aside any fear. He yanked at the six-shooter and cocked it, then kicked out the shrubs he had shoved in front of the opening between the boulders. The motion startled the white men. Rabbit saw white faces in the firelight, wide eyes looking up at him. Without further thought, he pointed the six-shooter at the nearest man and pulled the trigger. The blast overwhelmed the distant thunder for a moment, and the man doubled over as if kicked by a horse and fell back. Rabbit cocked the hammer and pointed the weapon a second time. The two remaining white men were frozen in place as a second shot blasted the night and the second man spun and fell. Rabbit felt the jolt of the recoil up his arm and cocked the six-shooter again. He jumped down the slight slope, surprised that the third man could only stare at him, his bearded face agape in fear. The gun boomed again. This time Rabbit saw blood spurt from the third man's neck even as he fell back. Then all he heard was the nervous stomping of the mare still inside the boulder crevice. The boy looked at the three bodies on the ground around the fire. At the first shot, the dead man's horses had bolted into the darkness. He was breathing hard and suddenly realized the acrid smell was from the six-shooter. It felt hot in his hand. They were dead. He knew it. All of them, and he had killed them. Involuntarily, he glanced down at the stump of his arm. Then he heard the rumble of thunder. Slashing through the night, the herd thundered east, dodging trees, shrubs, and boulders in the dark. Many stumbled when the ground fell away suddenly into a gully or draw or dry watercourse. Somewhere in the midst, bells attached to some of the mules clanked in a strange accompaniment to the thunderous song of flowing power and motion. Grable had to hold tight to his horse as the herd flashed past him and was swiftly gone. He thought he saw a rider or two at the outer edge and heard a faint shout amidst the rumble. As the rolling thunder of hooves moved past, he turned his attention toward the distant glow of fires from the tent town. Then he heard the hollow thuds of a few hooves that were either stragglers from the herd or soldiers riding in pursuit. A strident shout told him it was not stragglers, just as gunfire erupted to the north of him, and he saw muzzle flashes from different places in the dark. He guessed it was Hump and his young men shooting at the oncoming soldiers. Before he could join the fray, it was over. The pursuers stopped. An unfamiliar voice shouted, and Grable heard hoofbeats retreating toward the tent town. In a few moments, he heard the approaching footfalls of a walking horse as Hump materialized out of the night. "I guess they are smarter than I thought," he joked. "They chose not to pursue too far." Grable grinned as other riders appeared in the dark to join them. "But I think we should wait here, just in case they decide to be stupid and come back this way." "That was a big herd," someone said. "You should hope they do not scatter too far. It will be your task to look for them tomorrow," said Hump, half teasingly. Grable tucked one of his six-shooters back into his belt. "Maybe this will show anyone who is timid that these long knives are nothing to be afraid of," he said. "Just as long as it convinces enough of them," replied Hump. Farther east, Rabbit waited for several long moments after the last of the herd had passed by. It was dark because several horses had raced past the boulders and trampled the fire in the bodies of the white men. He thought to search for their weapons, but guessed they would be trampled as well. Throughout the stampede, he had stayed in the relative safety of the boulders, but had to work hard to keep the little mare calm. He led the mare out of the crevice and down into the now trampled hollow. She snorted at the scent of dead bodies and shied away slightly. The herd was now a faint rumble farther to the east, and there had been no further gunshots before from the west, where Hump and Grable and the others had been. With an effort, he swung onto the horse from the right side. He decided to follow after the herd and away from the tents because he had only three shots left in his six-shooter. Rabbit urged the mare into a fast walk, wondering at the sudden hollowness in the pit of his stomach. That concludes chapter 6.
קיים מכות שקטחם הכיתת שעה, פשוד הכירי, ומקשקה ירו, היהי, הכיתשית ומקיה, היהי.
This program is made possible by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.